Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and for this episode 174, I am very, very happy to have back in the cave the other half of the dynamic duo, everybody's favorite co-host, the one, the only, Lady J.
Hello.
Welcome back, Dav J.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Are you ready to podcast? It's been a minute. We got a WD-40, the podcasting Daf J. Are you excited for this episode?
No.
So let's get right into it.
Sure.
How are you? How are you, first of all?
I'm okay, thank you.
Yeah?
Yeah, thanks for asking.
It's very nice to have you here again.
Thank you.
You're my favorite podcasting partner.
Well, you have to say that because I have sex with you. So, I don't know how surface or how deep that statement is, but I'll take it.
It's part of the reason, but you are, to be quite honest, you are a good podcast partner.
I don't know.
You give good perspective.
Well, we'll see.
Yes.
We'll see.
Well, in the past you have.
That's objective.
Subjective.
Sure.
So let's get right into it. We are going to be discussing the Clown Prince of Crime, your favorite villain, to your favorite hero, the Joker.
Yeah.
So this is the review for the Joker 2019 psychological thriller that has just been released, starring Joaquin Phoenix, directed by Todd Phillips. We just saw it.
How long ago?
2 hours ago. We walked out of the theater.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. I just got home.
Maybe less. Probably. Maybe an hour ago.
Sure. Who's counting?
So this is like right off the cuff. First impressions. Who knows how we'll feel later on.
Uh-huh.
When we actually let it sink in.
Yeah.
So this review is obviously going to be very, very initial reaction. What was your... Going into this movie, when you saw previews and heard about it being made, considering all of the previous DC movies that have been released, what was your anticipation for this?
I didn't want to see it.
Okay.
I didn't care to, because I thought, oh, this is oversaturated, this story. However, when I learned a little bit more that it was like supposed to be the, the beginnings of the Joker unfolded, untold story, and that it was going to be presented as a film, not so much of a blockbuster movie. So that intrigued me, but I wasn't really looking forward to it.
Right. Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that. I was kind of like, what are they doing now?
Yeah.
The other route they took didn't work. So where does this fit in? Is it, in comic book terms, an Elseworlds movie where it doesn't have anything to do with anything else? This is just an interpretation of the character, but they're going to sell it by making it the Joker?
Yeah.
So I was kind of in the same camp as you. And of course, the portrayal of clowns in this one.
Yeah.
When Batman's not there, does the Joker scare you more?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess it sounds ridiculous to most.
No, explain it.
Because I feel like, okay, there's this madman out there, but there's this person, there's this opposite that's gonna stop him.
Mm-hmm.
That is gonna explain his madness, and there's gonna be, I don't know, there's gonna be an explanation as to why, kind of thing.
Right.
And this time, It was almost too real for me. Like if Joker were real, this is the world that we would live in, and I don't know if I can handle that. Like I can't even go out on Halloween because I don't know what people are gonna be dressing up as. Like I don't like fairs because there's clowns there. I don't necessarily care for movies that portray a clown being like a children's hospital. Like, I don't like clowns. And this was almost too close to reality.
Right, right, right.
And there isn't that guy to stop him.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, totally. In regards to, like, it being, I guess, sold as a Joker origin story, do you prefer the Joker having no origin story and him just existing and the explanation or the understanding of his madness is kind of ambiguous? You never really know exactly what it is? Or do you prefer a Joker origin story?
I like both. Mm-hmm. I like the ambiguous, we don't know where he came from. So the Dark Knight Joker, where it was like, oh, it was because he was, you know, abused as a child. Oh, it was because he was neglected by his wife. It was, oh, because it could have been all of these scenarios.
It's like optional, what's
it
the
was
word?
An open-ended...
Yeah, multiple choice.
Origin.
Yeah.
However, in the comics, there is the famous story... not the last laugh. Why do I always call it the last
laugh? The killing joke?
The killing joke. Where it's basically the Joker's origin being explained as this down on his luck comedian who experiences a really bad day and he becomes the Joker. And it mirrors Bruce's experience. A bad day and he becomes a guy behind the mask, Batman. And I think that's why I always liked that story, because there was an explanation to the whys.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they were positive or negative, there was an understanding.
Yeah.
The anomaly or the ambiguousness of how or where did this come to be, it was like, well, anyone can become this person if they don't tread lightly, or if they tread lightly, kind of thing, you know. Or what's the phrase? Doesn't matter, anyone can fall into that category when no one's immune to that,
right?
To
right.
that happening to them,
right?
So it almost, even though it was fictional and it was portrayed on paper as Batman's villain, his nemesis, at the end of the day, all of us do carry scars that affect us one way or another.
Right.
So there was a reality aspect of that character that all of us can potentially carry.
Right.
Maybe we're not the Joker, but we all have scars.
And if they're poked at and prodded at the wrong time, on the wrong day.
Yeah.
We could end up.
Well, maybe not end up, but we do have a moment of fury, right?
Right, like, right. Today, things can go bad.
Don't mess with me today. Like, you'll see right. the ugly side of me. I don't right. mean it. It was a moment of weakness or fury or whatever it was. But we all have that culpability of being an ugly person.
Famously, the Joker's kind of origin story, it's somewhat silly, but... depending on who's retold it or interpreted it into a storyline, let's say Under the Hood, right?
Mm-hmm.
The famous story is that whoever the Joker was, you never really are given a name in the comic books of what his name was. But there's this guy who, down on his luck, takes a job with the mob.
Mm-hmm.
And they make him pose as... this super villain criminal, the Red Hood, and mm-hmm. they just cover his face,
mm-hmm.
and he's kind of like a patsy.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening when things go awry in Axis Chemicals, famously, that was in the Batman 89 movie, and I think, I don't know if they use Acme Chemicals or Axis Chemicals in the comics as well. I think it might be Acme.
Yeah, because Warner Brothers is...
Right,
yeah.
That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Or I could be Maybe. Wrong, but yeah, but I know it starts with an A. And he famously falls into a vat of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And in the comic books, the hood and helmet that he wore protected him from dying completely. But his skin and appearance is completely scarred and changed to look like a clown
right.
or the Joker card.
Yeah. But that's why I like the comedian background, because it explains his...
humor.
It, yeah, it kind of goes hand in hand to the character he chooses to portray going forward.
Right, yeah. Right.
But go on.
I've always kind of liked, even in Batman 89, I like that they made him fall into the chemicals. Because mm-hmm. I love the fact that his psyche was damaged before. But now that he's physically scarred, it puts him over the edge. Because mm-hmm. now he's completely lost his identity. And in some ways doesn't know who he is, in a way. So it completely embraces the madness.
In 89, though?
In 89, they
mean... In the 89 Jack Nicholson version, I don't think he didn't know who he was.
No, he knew who he was. But I'm saying that they used that, him falling into chemicals, and his skin is stained for good.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
he's pasty
it's
white.
It's not makeup. It's not, him.
Yeah. When he puts makeup on,
yeah.
that's him covering up the white.
Yeah.
I always liked that the Joker is permanently scarred mm-hmm. like this. Mm-hmm. I like that. But the last couple of iterations, whether it's The Dark Knight or now this version...
They put face paint on.
They put face paint on him. Which one do you like better? With these movies adaptations, it's almost like we got to make it make sense for the real world.
Yeah.
Which one, for me, I like the scarring. Fall into chemicals,
yeah,
it's silly.
Yeah, I gotta say, I like the Batman animated Joker. Like, he's always white. He right. always has the purple suit and right. the green hair.
That's the best Joker.
It is, I think. But it is creepy, though. Mm-hmm. The idea that someone goes out of their way to take on the identity of a clown, whether it's to tint their hair green on purpose for the purpose of embracing a something that
like
not,
a motif.
Yeah, right? Not to say you can't color your hair. Right. My God, everything's so PC. I gotta say everything.
If you color your hair green after this movie, you're crazy.
But it takes commitment. I think that's mm-hmm. what it's trying to portray. It takes mm-hmm. commitment to take on this character.
Right. That's interesting.
Go in hard mm-hmm. with it, you know? But yeah, so I don't know if I actually answered your question. Was I looking forward to this movie? No, because it was too a little bit scary to me. I thought I wouldn't be able to sit through it. And I did find it cringeworthy at times to watch. Sometimes not just the Joker himself, when he was the Joker. I feel like the movie was very much about
Arthur Fleck.
Fleck.
Yeah.
And his story. It was definitely about the Joker, but it was his other alter ego, if you will. And it was very heavily that, even though the title of the movie is The Joker. It was also like the idea that other people in the movie were also embracing this clown motif.
Right.
And I couldn't escape it. And I didn't know it was going to be like that because I thought it was just one person. Right. We were concentrating on one person taking on this thing. But it was like everywhere all the time, unexpectedly. And it was freaking me out. So I don't know if I'm the best person to podcast about this movie because a lot of it was behind my scarf.
I think you're the right person to talk because you love Batman and you love the Joker. And
but
this...
you know what I like about the Joker, though? What I like about the Joker overall is even though he may be a madman, I feel he's very intelligent. He's very smart. And that's why I kind of like appreciate his character, even though I'm scared to high heavens from this guy, but I do like his wittiness, the fact that he finds things that are inappropriate funny, or he dances around and it just embraces that entire thing that comes along with that. You know yeah. what I mean?
Everything you're saying now, it's funny because you see the transition in this film
mm-hmm.
of that character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the descendants into darkness as you're watching this somewhat innocent guy who's...
been victimized, if you will.
Yeah, like this
he's
is
been
this,
victimized.
This is like the movie is basically a metaphor of this is what happens when you kick somebody when they're down. Because he literally gets kicked when he's down a number of times in this movie.
Yeah.
And it seems to have been a ongoing situation in his life where as you watch the movie and the pieces come together, you learn that this isn't somebody who just has a frail psyche. This is somebody whose frail psyche has been caused by numerous people and for numerous reasons. And I think one of the parts in the movie that you kind of is frightening but is very sobering is when he mentions to the, I don't know if it was to the social worker, but he said that all my life I've been wondering if I've actually existed. If my life is actually real.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can't distinguish reality from what may not be there. And that's a very frightening, sobering thought to think that is also what some people in real life might be feeling. And I think, too, me and you had just watched the recent documentary yesterday about, I forgot the name of the type of drugs, but I think the shorthand of it is benzos, where it's for people who suffer anxiety and people mm-hmm. who suffer depression. And it's all these different forms of that drug that are given to somebody initially to get rid of one problem, but then they're given a different version of it. And by the time they're done trying to get off of it, they're now on seven different pieces of medication per day. And they've completely lost who they are. That initially was just to help them maybe go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mentioned in this movie that he's got all this medication that he's been given and he has to take and stay on it. And you can see that he doesn't know where he's at sometimes.
Look, this doesn't make us experts of the mind, or we're not trying to be like, this is what we think about mental illness. It's just a perspective that has been shared that makes
sure.
you kind of sit back and see, okay. But listen, I don't know what I watched. Can we just skip to the middle now? I don't know what I watched. This movie was a little too intense for me. There was a couple of things. I didn't know if we were in it, if we were getting into it, if I was waiting for something to happen, if it was just his story being told without an actual motive, or I missed something. All I knew was, like, just be nice to people, because you never know if they want to shank you. It could be anything that could make them think that you were a terrible person and they'll want to take it out on you. You know what I mean? That being said, if you're an asshole, and I need to tell you, I think that's my right to say, hey, you're not being a nice person. But I think in general, we should just all be compassionate and understanding to people's.
But that's the difference, that what you just said there is the key, right? It's you being honest. There's a difference in you being honest with the person and you treating them or taking advantage of them when you feel necessary. I think that's kind of also the lesson in it too, is that the people who were straightforward with him, it was one way. But the people who were manipulating him or using him as the butt of the joke as they saw fit is the ones that he remembered, you mistreated
me.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because for you to say, you know what, if you're an asshole, I'm going to step to you and say what you need to hear. A lot of times, people appreciate that, even though at first it's hard, when you approach them in a way that...
But I also do believe, and I said it multiple times on the show, and I say it to you in real life, and to anyone else who's willing to listen, anything I believe can and should be said, it's just how it's being said.
100%.
So, you know, if you say, hey, what you did or what you're doing is making people uncomfortable, so maybe you want to try this so that it's not perceived negatively. That, I think, goes, makes a huge difference versus what's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I don't know what I watched. It was just a very, like, it was a psychological something. And it was, at times, quite descriptive of what he was feeling at the time. And I feel like the antagonist was portrayed as the protagonist, and I felt myself at times cheering for him.
And I think it's interesting you say that, because I do think that because you're following his journey and you're being made to experience what that person's experience is, you feel for them. So when you see, like, oh, that person's putting...
So do you think the objective of the director of this movie was to have the audience empathize for people in
absolutely.
That state of mind?
To be empathetic. I think a part of it is to be terrified of them. I think a part of it is to... there's all kinds of commentary that is being done here. But then at the same time, when you see the guy get kicked down and be taken advantage of and be used as a patsy when you know, the gun fell, that someone else gives him a gun to say, here, protect yourself.
Or even the simple fact that they made, sorry to cut you, but even the fact that one of his psychiatrists that he was seeing on a weekly basis says, look, they're cutting funding, so we're not going to be able to have our sessions anymore.
Yeah, no one cares about people like you and people like me.
That's right.
Right.
And I think that in itself was a statement in the fact that government or... I don't know what's out there. There isn't that readable, reliable assistance available for people that need it. Mm-hmm. Because if there's no money behind it, then it's not worth it.
Right, right.
Which is a shame.
Right. How did you feel about the tie-in with the DC Universe? Because they do definitely make it exist in Gotham. There's the Arkham Asylum. There's... The Wayne family
is... I don't like the way Thomas Wayne was portrayed.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all.
Yeah.
And if that was supposed to be Alfred, I don't like how Alfred was portrayed, like a patsy type of, like, not... I don't know. Listen... I've grown up looking in admiration. I know these people based on how I grew up watching them. Mm. So there was either the loyal Alfred Butler, or the military Alfred Butler,
mm-hmm.
or the, you know, the father like figure Alfred Butler. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I always knew that he was the butler, but he was more than that. He was intelligent. He was, he was just, like, he was with it. And the way I believe he was portrayed in this movie, however minor it was, I didn't like it. I didn't like that there was a perception of Thomas Wayne that was, seemed crooked and unjust and unworthy and untruthful.
Hmm.
When
he was a politician.
He was supposed to be like Dr. Wayne. He's mm-hmm. the one that wanted to make a difference in Gotham mm-hmm. City. He didn't forget about the small, the ghetto and the people that were being affected by high crime areas. Like, he wanted to make a difference. And if anything, that was one of the reasons why he was targeted and killed. At least that's what I remember him being portrayed as.
Yeah.
He was the hero that Bruce Wayne was without the mask, kind of thing. That's how I always associated him to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a medical professional. So he used his skills not just to benefit himself, but to help others. So that's how I always saw him. Especially in this day and age, any kind of politics, it just seems yucky and corrupt and sticky finger-like. It doesn't seem genuine. It doesn't seem honest. And... the fact that he... oh, stop it. The fact that he was just portrayed as a... even just momentarily as someone who was being charged with the idea of infidelity and abandoning his son. And I was confused by that.
Yeah.
That portrayal of him. I didn't like it.
It's an interesting twist to insinuate that the Joker... is the bastard child of Thomas Wayne.
Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy when you think about the like what that is saying. That's mm-hmm. that's like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That is perfect storytelling. but also that is ridiculous. Yeah. Because this is the thing that I've recently...
It's so left field that it seems like...
It's so left field.
How has no one thought up of this? And, but then it's like, that's loony. Like, no one... Why would that be?
But imagine... But now imagine if you were to instill that into the actual narrative of Batman and the Joker, where it's like, I'm your bastard brother.
No, that's terrible.
And like, we're brothers. We're not just Moriarty and Sherlock. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to torment you because I'm what your family's... I'm your family's biggest shame. But of course, that's not the case necessarily in this story. It's insinuated, but it's not never proven. It's almost like something that...
Well, I think it's kind of proven that it's not what we are originally thought to believe.
Right.
And it's how he's, that correctly?
Yeah, it's also how Arthur Fleck, a.k.a. the Joker, is taking in reality, how he's seeing things or how he wants to believe what they might be in order to motivate what his next move will be as well, right? It's interesting. I recently, and I think I told you about this, but I recently was watching a documentary about myths and monsters, but how, depending on the era you live in, and what's happening in society.
They tell stories to manipulate the thinking of the people.
Yeah.
Basically.
To change. They change what the status quo of a story is in order to accommodate what is going on now. And the example that they gave was Robin Hood, who through the ages, the way he's presented and the sides that he takes as far as the monarchy, who he is actually robbing and who he's actually helping, and his viewpoints of the king in different eras changes depending on which king was in power. And because the people were being moved by the legend of Robin Hood. So now it's interesting that there's been all this time where this basically elite family, this blue blood family, the Waynes, have been presented as... You know, however
the
maybe...
The model family.
The model family that even though they were rich, not just rich, they were super wealthy, that they were completely benevolent. Thomas Wayne was a completely benevolent man, a doctor who, you know, inherited this wealth, and his son was this great kid who became inspired to just help everybody obsessively, wanted to just always be doing the right thing no matter what. And now, as you see... society kind of the focus of things switches around a little bit. I felt Thomas Wayne was being presented as a Trump.
Yeah.
And there was even within the crowd or the mob of people who were protesting against him when he made the comment. It was like even the way he spoke was very flippant and just crass about people. It's like, well, anybody who does this sort of thing, they're all clowns, which inspires the kind of revolution in Gotham that eventually is his undoing, right? Which I think was story-wise is poetic in how they get to that eventuality of the Waynes being killed. What did you think of that change in how we know them to die? Again, for me, traditionalist. I much rather prefer the way I know the story to be as opposed to this, but this was clever.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the original story, but I do know a lot of people that were only ever introduced to the idea that Batman came to be based on the 89 Joker. Like, oh, he killed Batman's parents.
Yeah, so, I never liked that, but
I'm just saying.
Yeah, a lot of people think that.
There's those people that like that storytelling, and I feel like this was a nice medley of those two worlds, because the Joker inevitably in this story did kill the Waynes because of his quote unquote movement. Do you know what I mean? He kind of got the ball rolling,
right?
In regards to, just bringing down this high class, rich, advantageous. It starts with the E, but
epitome.
I'll skip it. But yeah, it was like the small guy taking that. It's like David and Goliath, the small guy taking out the big guy with little resources, but being very like chess piece about it. And I found that at the beginning of the film, Arthur was kind of like stumbling over his mission of whatever it is that he was trying to do. And then by the end, he was very fluid.
Mm.
Not just with his dance moves, but even like as if he was embodying this person without reservation.
Mm.
It was very unapologetic. And even when he was running from the two detectives, Joaquin Phoenix's portrayal of the Joker, I was like, wow, that's pretty fantastic. Like the way he was running, the fact that he got hit by the car, got back up, like that, like nothing will kill this guy.
Yes.
Nothing will kill him, and nothing will stop him from getting to his next objective.
Yes.
Whether it was to get behind the camera, whether it was to meet his idol, it was the chase with the detectives on the train, how he was outsmarting the detectives by, you know, getting these into simple a crowd. Ways. Very simple. It didn't take a genius, but you know he is
crafty,
one.
Crafty, yeah.
Right? Very, very purposeful, but unintentional. Do you know what I mean?
It's almost by purposely on accident.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt like. That to me was my favorite part of the movie. It was the creepiest because at least I felt like with the Joker himself, I'm like, okay, I know who I'm dealing with. There's that saying that you deal with the devil you know,
mm-hmm.
versus all these other extras and citizens with perhaps good motivation and good intention. They're portraying this horrid nightmare to me in this overwhelming and of stuff, like mm-hmm. green hair, freaky face, and who knows who's behind this. Like, there are some people that have good motivations behind a movement, and there's some people that take it a little too far.
You create an
anarchy. And how do you distinguish who's who in this party of people? So that was the scary part for me. But anyway, because he was kind of weaving in and out in this crowd, like he bumped into one guy, the one guy thought it was another guy, so there was a brawl, and he kind of like danced his way out of that little situation. Then being able to take the mask off of one guy, putting it on his own face, and slithering his way out of the madness, causing these two detectives to be attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like he didn't plan it. It was just
because of him.
It was because of him, and it was perfect timing, and it was perfectly placed, and he just walked away unscathed to go to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was very much Joker.
Yes, yes.
That was a Joker move.
Yeah.
And he
found the whole thing funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought it was brilliantly portrayed.
Yeah. When you mention all of these things, I start to realize what a fine balancing act they did in creating a narrative of the Joker that blends as many interpretations that have already been done. Because I feel that this is very much... this is the Joker that would become Heath Ledger. I feel in a lot of ways. Because even at the end when he's in the car, at the back of the car, and he's just looking out the window.
Yeah, that was very reminiscent. That was
very reminiscent of Dark Knight. And I'm like, oh, this guy becomes him.
Mm.
I thought that all this anarchy is what he becomes obsessed with. And the fact that he paints his face and he colors his own hair, and it's all about disrupting the status quo and disrupting the establishment. Because this Joker now is very much against the establishment of things. But then at the same time, he's also very much reminiscent of the Cesar Romero Joker from the Batman 66 in the way that he dresses and in the way that he moves his body language. It's very like old school Joker that we grew
up
watching.
Do we know what year this movie was supposed
to be? This takes place in 1981, and it feels like it's Gotham City, but it looks very much like
New York.
Times Square.
Absolutely.
Back in 1980s.
Yeah.
And
yeah, with all the graffiti on the trains and the
Reagan era.
Yeah.
Right? Where the people who were downtrodden, and the people who were doing well were doing very well.
Right.
Kind of thing. But yeah, I feel like every Joker, some iteration of him has been represented in this story. The only one that I do enjoy, it's probably my favorite Joker, is the one who was associated with the mob.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of like that he has that mob link.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes that
wasn't he a driver or something?
In Batman the Animated Series Joker, he's just a made man within the mafia.
In the animated series or the Phantom or the Phantom movie?
Phantasm? Mask of the Phantasm?
Yeah.
I consider that part of the same universe.
Okay.
So yeah, that was kind of his origin there, but he's always been mob connected in some way. Where he can maneuver in and out of it.
So but see that's what but that's
That's my...
I know what you mean, but that seems so typical. Like, oh, well, he's always had a crime history.
Yeah.
As opposed to just taking any guy off the street who's experienced something and then transforming them into this, I didn't know that could happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's unexpected.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But
I know what you mean. Like, I feel like there's a consistency in that.
But see, now that this character, you realize that he was a heavily medicated person. But now that he's like, I'm off my meds now.
Mm.
Anything is possible. He adapts to whatever situation he's in, he adapts to it. And all of a sudden, he's standing on the top of a cop car, leading a mob of people. He's got this ability.
Man, I don't know.
A mob.
So what are you rating it at? Because I don't know.
Well, as far as a film is concerned, this one will stand the test of time. This is in
Dark. You think?
This is in Dark Knight category because it's brilliantly.
I didn't even know what rating it's been getting lately.
Well, the first initial out the box reviews were like tens across the board. I think.
But are people saying why? Besides the acting.
The acting, the fact that it is a comic book origin, but it can stand on its own without it being a comic book origin. Like it brilliantly straddles the line of if they never do this again or pick this up from here, it doesn't matter. It is what it is. It's a standalone film. I'm that stickler a little bit where are they going to pick up the next Batman now that is going to be Robert Pattinson?
No, don't even bring that. Do you have to talk about that?
Well, it's
gonna
happen.
I don't care for that.
I'm just saying, is this Joker going to be his Joker?
No.
I hope not.
No.
Because I like when Batman and the Joker are the same
age. Is it for real? Is it for real? Or is it just like,
no.
Do they just want to get like social media outrage and see like, is this like a social experiment to see what people really think about this Pattinson guy being the Batman? Like, is this, they're just trying to understand the human psyche?
No.
And the uproar that would be. If this guy takes on the mantle?
No, I think it's legit. There's
a
director.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's absurd.
It's absurd? We thought this Joker movie was going to be absurd.
No. I never said that. I said that was going to be heavy. And I didn't know if I wanted to get into it. Because it seemed like we've had, you know, the Caesar. We've had Jack Nicholson. We've had Heath Ledger. We had the other guy that's in that singer. What's his name? That was in Suicide Squad. Eric.
Oh, Jared Leto.
So it's like, okay, how many of these? And then I don't know.
That's my least
maybe
favorite.
Maybe I'm overthinking it. But prior to seeing this film, they showed what looked like a Suicide Squad sequel, but it was all girls instead. And I don't know, is there a Joker now that's being portrayed by the guy that played, is he supposed to be the Joker?
No.
It looked like it was supposed to be the Joker.
Ian McGregor.
Yes.
No.
So who is he in that movie?
I don't know, because they call it The Birds of Prey, but The Birds of Prey are... Harley Quinn has never been in The Birds of Prey, of my recollection.
I don't understand what DC is doing, and they need to give it up. They need to stop it.
Yeah, I mean...
Stop it.
This movie, if they're going to go about things doing it like this, I can deal with that.
No, you know what? Maybe, but I'm over this, like, high intensity...
Yeah.
Like, give me a good story, and maybe I'm expecting too much because Marvel has done it so well, and I'm like, ugh. I literally walked away from this movie not knowing what I saw. It was high intensity for me.
So as a film, take step away from it being what you're connected to as far as Batman is concerned. As a film, how would you rate it?
High. As a film.
As a film. Because you love, like, your movies.
It was presented at TIFF, at the Toronto International Film Festival. That I consider this a film. Would I rewatch it? No.
You wouldn't rewatch it?
No.
I wouldn't rewatch it in the same fashion that I rewatch, you know, Winter Soldier or Dark Knight. But when I'd be in, like, a mood for something psychological, I'd want to watch this. Because it was just... You can see the descent into him becoming this madman.
I don't know. If I want something psychological, I don't know if I want to get that deep into it. Like, I like Inception. Like, something that, layers of the mind. And that kind of, like, problem solving and how you can tap into certain stuff. That, to me, that's entertaining and informative and a different approach. This is, like, borderline... serious.
Borderline serious?
No, I mean, you know what I mean? Because I don't think it's something to take lightly.
No,
this
not
is
at
actually
all.
Some people's reality, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that's why I say film versus movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, a movie is an escape. It's something to take pause with. It's something to take a break. Like, helps you just step away and get a distraction. Versus a film or something portrayed in an art form, it's speaking on the realities of life, which isn't necessarily meant to put you at ease, but to bring awareness. And I could be wrong, it's just my opinion. But normally you walk away with some kind, it lingers with you. Do you know what I'm saying? Then you have those cool movies. They're like, oh, all the explosion and all the storytelling. And oh, it was so cool. But then there's some stuff that, you know what? This is an unfortunate reality for many, many people. And how
disturbing.
Exactly. Yeah. And how we handle it as a society, or how we handle it as members of families that do have to deal with this.
Yeah.
It's harsh.
Yeah, it's a little unnerving.
Yeah, so yeah. I don't know if I would rewatch this as an entertainment thing so much as it's just, you know what, I saw it once. I feel like I can see what's happening. But I don't know. It's pretty...
It was an excellent movie. It really was.
Film.
Excellent film. It was a good adaptation.
And who knew Frank Sinatra had some pretty crazy songs that had, like, a double meaning or had some kind of, like...
You hear it different now.
Absolutely.
You hear it different now. And yeah. And I really do feel like Joaquin Phoenix, he's the Joker. I've seen how the Joker becomes the Joker.
Okay, can we talk about the end? Is he heralded as a hero? What was the ending all about?
The ending was basically him,
and then
being validated. His whatever he did was validated by a large group of people enough for him to want to keep going for that. He was validated in his movement because he spoke for the little guy in the moment. As horrendous and horrific as what he did was for those people who were being kicked down when they were kicked when they were already down, he was the face for all of them. And you see stuff like that today. Like, not too long ago, you had that group Anonymous that they all wore the Guy Fawkes mask, right, from V for Vendetta. things like this can happen. As far-fetched as it seems, oh, it's a movie, oh, it's not like... Things like this happen.
Well, things like this are happening.
Right, right. Yeah. So I think they're presenting something from the 80s based on, and you know, going, putting it in that time frame, but then you realize, like, oh, crap.
We're not far from that.
And yeah. Where people might want to be, like, people might get to that point if the wrong thing is said or if they see the wrong thing on social media. Because people were scared of this movie being that trigger to get people who were in that frame of mind to pull a Joker. Because you see, I mean, in our own city, we saw a person who, just from his online interaction, went out and did something Jokerific, if you will. That, like, with the van. Like, that's something you would see out of a comic book to see that would happen in real life on a street that you
frequent. You know what? I think I'm not going to talk much about it because I don't know much about it. I think the interview of what had happened on our streets, on Yonge Street, with the van attack in the city of Toronto, his interview was put online so everybody knows what he said. But I think his intent was to start a movement. He said, because of this, because of what happened to me, I did this in order to actually get other people to...
incite
that kind right. of yeah. thing. And I don't know why I brought that up, but...
Well, that's what the Joker essentially does.
Right.
In every iteration
of the Joker. It's not far-fetched.
No, not at all.
It's not far-fetched.
Because whether it's the mobster turns into the Joker, whether it's the mentally ill person turns into... Whatever version of it is, ultimately, his goal is not to become rich. It's to undo the establishment, to cause some sort of anarchy, to make everybody realize everything's a big joke in this world. That's really what the Joker is all about. To make everyone else see, all it takes is one bad day and you can turn into me.
So I guess it goes without saying you appreciated the movie.
I was impressed. Was
it what you expected?
Yes and no. I was expecting, when people were like, oh, it's super dark, super violent. It is. It's all those, it has those moments. But it was a very good story, very well paced. You see the transformation from a, like, what scares me about Joaquin Phoenix is I feel like he could become this person.
Oh, right.
No, he, like him, when he's on talk shows, we were just talking about, I'm like, I saw the end of this movie and I was thinking to myself, this isn't that much different from when he's on a talk show.
Don't put it out there.
I'm just, he was the perfect guy to play it.
Or he's just a really good actor.
Incredible actor.
Because wasn't there a time where everyone thought he was off his rocker and he would like grew the beard? And it was all for like a film or some kind of social experiment something. I don't know. He was being interviewed and he was like giving everyone a hard time in the sense that nobody knew what he was up to. And it was just a stint of something. Right? Yeah. It was a shtick that he was trying out for the sake of
seeing how people would
react.
I
think a film with one of the Affleck brothers.
Affleck, yeah,
so really, that's what I mean. I think he's either one of the greatest of our time that we don't realize.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
Or he's taken on this role so much psychologically that I'm not a person of the arts, so I wouldn't know, but I do know there are some actors. I like watching this thing on the internet from the Hollywood Reporter, where a bunch of actors or actresses or directors or artists, basically on that platform, they get together and they're interviewed as a unit and their perspectives are shared amongst them. And some of them have relayed that at times, depending on how deep their story or script or portrayal is of a person, it's hard to let go and distinguish who they are versus the person they take on.
Yes.
And especially too, because he lost so much weight for this role. He lost, I think, a total of 50 pounds. And I don't know how he did it, but I think that in itself also has a great effect on the mind, right? And your body and what you're putting yourself through.
They said that's affected Heath Ledger, right?
I don't know.
When he played the Joker, like it took a toll on him.
So there you go.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that that's what it is, but could it happen based on what other artists have said about that?
Right.
It's
right,
very
right.
hard to sometimes separate. Just walk away from something that you've taken on for weeks or sometimes months back to back to back. Like you're living and eating and breathing this person.
Yes, yes.
Consistently.
Yes.
And kind of just putting your own self in the corner until it's time to resurrect yourself.
Yeah, you put yourself away. Yeah. When I say that Joaquin Phoenix is a Joker, I'm saying that he's stolen the role from everybody else who's played it. Like, he's going to be the guy.
That's not how you said it. You widened your eyes and you scared the hell out of me, making it seem like now we have a real Joker. And we need to find real Batman.
because, you know, for a long time, Jack Nicholson owned the role. Like, he chewed up that movie. That first Batman movie is basically a Joker movie because of how well he played, or, you know, we remember him for it. But then when Heath Ledger played the Joker, everyone was like, I didn't even see Heath Ledger. He's, you know,
mm-hmm.
Now when you see Joaquin play the guy who isn't the Joker and you slowly see the transition into the clown,
mm-hmm.
you're like, it's almost like from now on, even in comic books, how he portrayed the Joker is going to now be, that's the standard
version.
We'll see.
Is that what you're getting from the comic book universe, the community?
Definitely after...
Because you know how they've taken on Nick Fury looking like Sam Jackson?
Yeah.
Do you see it going that in that direction?
It definitely, the Joker, like when Nicholson played it, you definitely saw that continuing sort of stylized version of the Joker in a way, even into the animated series, because mm-hmm. it was kind of taken from what Tim Burton established, the Art Deco style and everything,
mm-hmm.
that it wasn't Jack Nicholson necessarily, but you can see the
mirror images,
sort of, right?
Of the person.
And yeah, and then when Heath Ledger came and played the Joker, and there was that sort of intensity, that sort of dirty... It wasn't quite as, like, the Joker always sort of had, like, a give you a flower and...
Okay, can I say that was also one of the freakiest parts of the movie? When he was with Bruce at the fence, at the gate.
Right,
and then when he gave him the stick, and then he made flowers, that made me jolt.
Yeah, it did. I actually saw you jump. You really creeped out from that little trick.
Oh, and when he, like, was just, I don't know, in the park somewhere, and then he, like, did that little escalator move behind the brick... thing, and then he popped up with the red note. Oh, I almost threw up. It was freaking me out.
Yeah, you didn't even have any popcorn. You didn't want to eat anything.
No,
you were just so... you had a little twitch in your leg the whole movie.
I tried my best to...
And even when I put my hand on you, you jumped. Yeah, no, I think...
I think that's the real reason why I won't rewatch it. Because I don't think I can.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, no, especially with DC, they'll take, you know, the version that has become popular.
What can I ask? Because I'm ignorant right now. Mm-hmm. Is this a DC thing? No.
The movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a DC movie.
Because you know how they're like, Spider-Man's not Sony or he's not Marvel and all that other crap?
Oh, yeah,
Is this fall under the DC umbrella?
Yeah, okay. Because it's Warner Brothers.
Okay.
Right? So they just, I guess now they're at the point where they're not as concerned about
making... Or you know how Nolan
is
like, this has nothing to do with the DC universe.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering where this falls into that.
Yeah, I don't know if it goes in, like, I don't think this Joker is going to become Jared Leto Joker. I think it's just the Joker movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say, do you think that, because the age difference always was something that I took note of. I can handle the Joker being older than Batman, but I always kind of like when they are...
Well, I think they could be in the same age
apart.
Bracket,
yeah.
But not like...
20 years difference.
Not, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Joker being somebody that can actually run away from Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Having that sort of...
Gusto.
Yeah. Whereas the Penguin is the more older, ugly gangster. He's in that part of, you know... Like Bruce Wayne and Harvey Dent and the Joker are all in the same age bracket.
And all of them can be any one of us.
Yeah.
Right?
I've never seen you and Batman in the same room, so you never know. Okay, before we wrap up, what's your favorite go-to Joker story? What is it for you?
I think. I think the Red Hood.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
I think the Red Hood would be my top one. Mm. How about you?
There's one that was, it's a 4-issue miniseries called Going Sane. And it's from one of my favorite guys, J.M. DeMatteis wrote it. And it's, the Joker and Batman have a battle, and Batman is presumed dead. He, you know, falls off a cliff or explosion, and he's dead, goes down a river, and the Joker...
goes into depression?
The Joker doesn't go into depression, he goes sane.
Oh, which is the one where he goes depressed when that, he... oh, that's the animated series. Yeah. Never mind. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So he loses his, I guess, his identity because now his other half, his arch rival, is gone. So his purpose in life is now different. So he takes on the persona of a sane person named Joseph Kerr.
Wow.
And he goes on with his life for a little bit, and Batman is found and nursed back to health. And for a certain amount of time, Joseph Kerr, or Joe Kerr, he has a little bit of a relationship with someone, and he has all of these flashbacks of who he once was. His psyche is fighting itself. So wow. For a time, you see the Joker be sane. And then him and Batman.
So how is he sane? Does he have the makeup permanently on him?
Or I think he paints his face to go back to how he once looked.
Wow.
It's an interesting... J.M. DeMatteis is super psychological in his storytelling, right? And it's a short 4 issues. Took place in the 90s. It was kind of like a flashback sort of story. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a good standalone.
Can I read that? Like... on a Saturday?
Could you read it on a Saturday? Yeah. You could read it on a Tuesday to and from work.
No, I'm just saying. No, I don't like taking stuff on the train.
Yeah, you could totally read it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'll finish it same day?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. You'd finish it same day.
Okay.
Trying to think of another. There's another one called The Man Who Laughs, which is another short story.
Yeah, I remember reading
Ed Brubaker, Doug Monkey. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. It's like Batman and Joker's first altercation with each other. That's a good one. I liked Under the Hood. And I even like Death in the Family.
Ooh, when he takes people's faces off?
No, Death in the Family.
Oh, that's when he kills Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Death of the Family is where he takes... Yeah, that's another... pretty good one. But Death in the Family is a classic, you know, 80s comic, but he really did that?
Mm-hmm.
That they let the Joker do that in a book and it stood. Mm-hmm. That leads to Under the Hood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I always
so really you have more than one answer.
Have more than one. Cuz you know what?
There is such a plethora.
Every Batman story ultimately leads to the Joker. Him and those two having that.
Yeah, but then there's people like you who say, well, it's just Batman, just Joker. Can't they think of anything else?
Well, I think it's not so much that can't they think of anything else, is that they're doing bad again. It's like, why don't you let the guy who did it really, really well breathe? You don't have to try to top the other guy who did it. Like, do it. When someone goes about and does like a really good Riddler story, it's like, you just made Riddler the best villain. Like, that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Like, make Two-Face his best villain. As opposed to, okay, let me guess. The guy behind it all is going to be the Joker again, right? Like, that's sort of the thing. But
I like when Gorilla Grodd is behind everything.
Gorilla Grodd? That's such a random thing to say.
I do, though.
It's
so unexpected, and you're like, what?
The gorilla?
Yeah. Right? Like, it's so obvious to say Brainiac, right? But then you're like, Gorilla Grodd?
Mm-hmm.
He's behind all these stuff? Madness. It's just madness, I tell you.
What's your favorite animated series Joker story?
Oh my goodness, there's just too many. I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
There's just too much.
Yeah.
Too many.
The Killing Joke is also a fantastic one. I mean, it's heavily criticized nowadays.
I don't care about that. You know, the feminists are going to come after me. Look, it was a story that is and can happen. Has happened to some people, unfortunately. You know what I mean? It's just, the ugly things of life are what need to be discussed so that they're not so taboo, so that we know how to address them. Mm. If you keep things under the dirt, how are you ever going to know how to problem solve? Mm. I'm not saying that that kind of stuff should be used as like a form of... I think it's a brilliant story. And as a woman, I don't take offense by that. I don't see it as misogynistic. I see it as a victim. And I see it, if anything, empowering to a woman who has been victimized to that state to be able to still hold a purpose in life.
A credit to the writers after who said...
But that's what I mean. It's not like they just abused a woman and left her for dead or left as nothing. They still found purpose for her, whether it was to... You know, her mind was still useful. She was still admired by her peers. She wasn't just this, well, you're wasted now.
Because you're right, because you're looking at it from the grand scope of what that character became and what she meant to a whole other group of people later on. But initially, the way Alan Moore wrote it, he did just use her as fodder.
Okay.
That when I say that story is criticized, it's more... How he didn't plan to turn her into Oracle.
Fine.
That part of it. But you're not incorrect that Oracle...
But what he told, as horrific as it was, has it not actually happened to people?
Yeah, no. I think
There's violent things that happen in TV shows and movies and even in the Bible. Like, are we not going to talk about them because they're so ugly?
No,
So, I don't know. Maybe I'm to the other extreme where it's like, it's okay as long as you justify it later on. I'm not trying to say that. Maybe there was some objectifying of women, but I think there was also more to the story that was being told besides that. That wasn't the only thing. It was also trying to torture and dehumanize a man and his relationship with his daughter and, you know, trying to dismantle a family dynamic, not just between Gordon and Barbara, but between, you know, Bruce and members of his family and how he was going to approach this maniac. Does he finally kill him or what is he, you know what I mean? Like, to me, that's also a psychological thing. It carries so much more weight than the thing that people want to find offense in.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion and people might disagree. I just think if you concentrate and focus on the one thing, you're losing all the other aspects of what we can take away from and learn from.
And we did an episode, I'm pretty sure, on The Killing Joke. I don't remember. It's somewhere in the archives.
Probably.
But we did a Killing Joke episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so many stories. I want to get back to you on that.
Okay.
What favorite animated Joker story there was. I'm sure it has something to do with Christmas.
Yeah, there are some good ones.
Yeah.
I always remember the one where the Joker kidnaps the kid playing a clown.
Yeah, he went to the birthday party. It was a rich kid.
Yeah. The mayor's kid.
Yes.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
And then you see him disrobe as the clown and he's still the clown.
I remember... the reason why I brought it up, because it is one of my top five, I think, the one where the Joker goes depressed because Batman's nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
And he has, like, no purpose, and Harley's trying to make him laugh, and the hyenas are there, and he's like, no, I'm just not on the mood. Like, she's like... So she gets concerned, and everyone's worried about why the Joker has no gusto for life anymore. That I thought that was interesting.
Did this movie... Fun. Oh, Agustis. Oh, it didn't come.
Hmm. Oh.
There it is. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Did this movie make you want to pick up a comic again with the Joker and Batman? Like, to get...
I need someone to set him in his place. Hurrah of, like, the Joker's our hero was a bit of a mind... fluster. What is happening?
Good editing.
What's up with these movies with the bad guy winning at the end? Is that the new thing now?
Right. Who is he, the bad guy? Is he the victim?
Yeah. Right? Or is he the...
Is everyone getting what they deserve? Ugh.
It's eerie.
Yeah.
It's so eerie.
I like to think, too, that this guy, this Arthur Fleck, and whatever it was that he did during this 1981 is what inspires the guy who becomes the Joker. He looked to this guy as his, like, idol.
You think?
I don't... That's just my interpretation.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
That would kind of work, too. If you wanted to...
disassociate or tell a story branching off of
this. Yeah. Without the timeline being messed up.
Very interesting. It was nice going to a movie with you. It's been a minute.
Thank you for...
I almost did it, but...
putting on your big girl pants and going to watch this movie that would have otherwise never been on your list to watch for the fact that it's no Batman, but it's full of clowns.
Yeah.
We're going to watch It Part 2.
Absolutely not.
All right. Well, thank you, Daph J.
You're welcome.
It was a blast. It was a blast having you on the show again. And we should do your top 5 Batman animated series episodes. That would be a good one.
That would be so much fun. Remember, we were watching it for a while.
We should get back into that.
Did we ever say we were gonna do that? We just never did.
Yes, we did. We
have too many things.
We had a Mask of the Phantasm episode that we had.
That's in the vault. That's not even archived.
It's in the vault somewhere. We should do that.
The keys thrown away. Don't have the combination.
Like the Prince and Lenny Kravitz album. Well, thank you everybody for listening. If you want, you can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com to leave us your viewpoint on this episode or on the Joker movie. If you disagree or agree with us, what's your favorite Joker story?
Hey.
Right? Leave us a review on iTunes. It always helps to get the show out there to a wider audience. And you can follow us on Facebook. Follow me, Eric Anthony, or on Instagram. Just type in Cave of Solitude and you'll find us.
There you go.
Sound good?
Sounds excellent.
Thank you again for listening. And that's life.
That's life. But be kind to people so we don't have to deal with this madness so much all the time. Just be nice.
That's right. Pick up somebody when they're down.
Yeah. That's right.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said that's life. And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and